Human trafficking has been a long-standing global problem. Though data is limited by trafficking's clandestine nature, the International Labor Organization estimates almost 25 million people were victims of human trafficking worldwide in the previous year, as well as the previous 5 years. On this edition of 360 View, we are going to look at how the continued increase in sex trafficking worldwide, despite greater awareness, and what countries are doing to take the right and the wrong steps to eliminate. Let's get started. Thanks for joining. I'm Skynell Hughes, and sex trafficking is a problem across the globe. We are joined by our international correspondent, Roxana Solano, to discuss which areas are hotspots for this dangerous crime. Roxana.
Scotty, sex trafficking is modern-day slavery. Sex traffickers will use manipulation, violence, and threats to trap their victims. Only one out of 100 people escape sex trafficking alive. The countries with the most sex trafficking are Belarus, China, Iran, North Korea, Russia, Sudan, Syria, and Venezuela. China has about 3.2 million victims of sex trafficking. In Asia, 36% of trafficked victims are children. Traffickers in Iran target girls between the ages of 13 and 17 for trade abroad. Kidnappers will grab the girls young, and then once they deem them old enough, they use them for sex trafficking. North Koreans, for example, trying to flee the country become vulnerable to human trafficking. Statistics show they add to the numbers in China. Ironically, those who do escape and are returned back to North Korea face huge consequences for leaving, often labor camps or even death. In Sudan, law enforcement agents are often involved in and profit from child sex trafficking rings. In Syria, ISIS requires girls to submit to virginity tests, then sell them to the highest bidder in what is being called slave bazaars. In Venezuela, 26% of sex trafficking victims are young girls. Some countries' governments, like Venezuela and Sudan, do very little to protect victims or punish those who run these sex trafficking rings. Sex trafficking in Thailand is a $12 billion industry. This makes the country more money than drug trade. Migrants are most at risk of becoming sex trafficked. This is probably because white Texas is the state in America with the most sex trafficking cases, as migrants flooding through the border state. The rise in social media has made it easier for captors to lure in victims. Some with the promise of high-paying jobs or a romantic relationship to whisk them away from a troubled life. It is important to talk with your children about how to avoid being taken. I'm Roxana Solano for 360 View. Back to you, Scotty.
Those are devastating numbers, Roxana. Thank you for sharing with us. So joining me first to discuss the current situation regarding sex trafficking and why it seems the problem is only getting worse is advocate against sex trafficking and founder of Lynn Warriors, Lynn Shaw. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Scotty. And I want to give you a great big hug for always being such a great media ally and really wanting to cover this critical and crucial subject matter, because human trafficking, we really have to call it human slavery, because more people are enslaved today in the United States and around the globe. So what are we going to do about it? Let's talk about it.
Well, that's exactly it. And that's with more people being aware of it. This is something that's happening in our backyards and then across the globe. It's not just, this is truly an international problem. People just think it's, oh, it's in another neighborhood. It's not. It's in your own neighborhood and that neighborhood as well. So I want to talk about, is it more or less common for traffickers to keep their victims in their country of origin or to move them to another country?
Typically, they move them to another country or within the country. They keep moving them around to disorient them. But in all of this talk about trafficking, I want everybody to realize trafficking all around the globe is happening at your kitchen table or in your child's bedroom or, you know, at the dining table, wherever, because the internet is fueling all of this. There is no accountability with big tech. There's nobody reining it in, so the predators are easily able to get to more people. And again, we have a lot of studies that are showing this is right up there with the drug trade. A lot of law enforcement we work with tells us this is bigger than the drug trade. So although we have a lot of hope at the Warriors, because there's a lot of good things are happening right now, we have to talk about what I call the nuts and bolts of what is actually going on, and provide information so a parent or a guardian can understand what are they going to do? How are they going to intervene? How are they going to prevent? Or what happens if they see somebody? Do they know who to call, or what resources are available? So that's what we want to get at. What do people do?
What's interesting, you bring that up, even for the research for this show, there's obviously a national number if you're in the United States, or individual countries have a number that they can contact, but there's not actually one international number that someone can call, especially, like you said, these traffickers move them around multiple places to keep them disoriented. And that's, I think, a big issue, because you look at countries like Pakistan, Indonesia, China, India, and Bangladesh are all in the top 10 for countries known for the sex and human trafficking network. Considering how long and extensive these networks are, is it realistic to think anything could actually be done to reduce that problem, Lynn? And what do you see that to be?
First of all, if we put all of our media attention and awareness, we've been talking about a balloon forever, we've been talking about climate change, if we could switch the mindset and get not only the public on board, if we had the media, which the public is listening to around the globe, talking about all these issues, that would help tremendously. And yes, there is hope and there is help. We have a lot of international organizations behind the scenes right now working together to bring this all into one focal point. You are very correct when you say the biggest problem right now, there is not one main place for everybody to come together. I also want to point out, Scotty, that countries such as China, these are very well-oiled, organized crime machines with their labor camps, with their sex trafficking, everything. So we have to really get more at that one spot where everybody can come together, have a main phone number or website, and it is being worked on. And that's why when I say I have hope, I have great hope. A lot of things are being done behind the scenes that are coming forth.
Well, it's interesting because it feels like you have to just, every time you get over a little bit of a hurdle, you obviously hit another wall. And one of the, I think, the biggest issues is actually the definition. You start off by saying we talk about sex trafficking, but there's also labor trafficking and human trafficking. So what are some of the signs to look for in regards to human and labor trafficking?
Okay, so labor trafficking is much more difficult to actually recognize because, for instance, let me give you an example. We have all the migrants coming over the border. They very happily want to work and make some money, a large group of them. They don't identify as a labor trafficking victim, so they won't come forward. And actually, law enforcement sees people working, so they don't consider them trafficking. We also have to have better indicators and training for law enforcement what constitutes a trafficking victim.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, you watch today, and I feel like today more than ever, especially if you go through a lot of the streaming services, movies and TV, at the very least, are talking about trafficking as a subject. I mean, there's lots of movies right now that are focusing it. But does that actually hurt the idea that this is actually something reality? This isn't just something made up for entertainment purposes and fiction, but this is actually real life that is happening?
You know, I have thoughts on that, Scotty, and my thoughts are anytime we can bring up the words human trafficking, or we have a piece of entertainment or literary that talks about it, let's switch that over and leverage it for good. Let's not get caught in sort of this, you know, titillation of sex trafficking, because there's a lot of that going on. But let's look at the entertainment and let it open up conversation, you know, what this movie is about or this book is about, with our kids, with ourselves, with our communities, and provide facts and truths, because more than anything, we need the real information out there, what is actually happening. Not just a lot of people who jump on board online, criticize, put out the wrong information. We have a lot of that going on. We want the facts. And one fact I want to point out is whatever numbers you hear as far as stats and studies and percentages, you can almost bet that they are much, much higher than what's reported.
Well, and I think that's a part of it, is trying to identify, because like you said, it's hard to identify some of these different, especially when it comes to labor. You know, another industry that has come up and is now starting to be shown is very closely tied, but I know you've got probably a lot more facts than I do. How connected is the porn industry with sex trafficking?
Sadly, Scotty, we have studies that say over 90% of people involved in the porn industry are actually trafficked. Now, you might say, how can that be? You know, maybe they're doing this of free will. Absolutely not. They're vulnerable people to start with. They may have addictions. They may think it's a love, romance situation. They are eventually put into this business. And we have to, you know, people say to me, why don't they just walk away? Why don't they can't? They are psychologically and mentally beaten down. Where are they going to go when they have this psychological grip on them and they have no money or any place to go? So one thing I want to point out about this is the biggest categories right now in porn online have to do with children. And we don't call it child porn. Most of the media will always say child porn. We have renamed it CSAM, child sexual abuse material. That is a much more descriptive words to encapture what that is. So we have to go after the porn industry, not only to help people, you know, exit and have exit strategies for them, where are we going to put them, but also the industry itself for sponsoring this type of child sexual abuse material. Anything with a minor is illegal, and it's a very big problem.
Thank you, Lynn Shaw, for joining us. And you can find out more about Lynn's work by visiting lynnswarriors.com. Now, when we come back, one state in the U.S. is proposing a new law to help curb trafficking following a young girl hiding her transgender identity from her mother and the school actually allowing it. Don't go away.
That we were gonna die.
I saw the blood, the bullets, I saw everything.
And I crawled all the way to the right side of the room, and then I hid behind the desk.
Columbine happened 2 years before I was even born, and this has happened again and again and again and again and again, because people continue to stick with the system.
I sent my kids to school that day like any other day, and only one of them came home.
Basically, we want to make sure that certain weapons that are just too dangerous for regular civilians shouldn't be in the hands of those people.
If we weren't safe at school, we're safe nowhere.
It's just a start, really.
I look forward to talking to you all.
That technology should work for people.
A robot must obey the orders given it by human beings, except where such orders would conflict with the first law.
Show your identification.
We should be very careful about artificial intelligence.
The point, obviously, is to create trust rather than fear.
I would like to take on various jobs.
I mean, with artificial intelligence, we are summoning the demon.
A robot must protect its own existence, its own existence.
Welcome back. We want to now focus on a story of a young girl from the United States who was sex trafficked not once, but twice. A young 14-year-old girl named Sage began to identify as a boy at school and was brutally bullied, but the school did not tell her parents. So one day, she ran away with someone she met online in a transgender chat group. Here is her mother describing the horrific experience.
9 days later, the FBI found her in Baltimore. My baby had been lured online, sex trafficked by DC, then Maryland. She was locked in a room, drugged, gang-raped, and brutalized by countless men. It was night. The FBI told us to pick her up in Maryland the next morning. We packed our cars with blankets and stuffed animals and arrived by 8 a.m., but we were told we couldn't see her and were summoned before Judge Robert Kershaw late that afternoon. They didn't even tell Sage that we came for her. We finally entered the courtroom, and Sage appears on a huge Zoom screen from a prison cell. She looks tiny and broken, and I cry out, "I love you, Sage." Sage responds, "I love you too, Nana." But attorney Anissa Khan rebukes us. She is a he, and his name is Draco, not Sage. We were floored. What?
Sage's mother, Michelle, said they didn't care Sage wanted to go by Draco. They just wanted their child home. But the judge decided to charge them with abuse for misgendering, and Sage was sent to a boys' juvenile detention facility instead of back into the arms of caring and loving parents.
Sage told me she was the only girl and repeatedly assaulted. She was given street drugs by the other kids.
The lawyers never gave Sage any letters written by her mother and told her her mother didn't want her anymore. The lawyer even asked Sage to lie and say her parents were hitting her. Instead, she ran again.
Sage ran from the children's home and disappeared for months. They told me she might already be gone forever, but I couldn't give up, and I finally found a tip on her social media that led the marshals to her in Texas. She had been drugged, raped, beaten, and exploited. This time, I was able to be with her for the traumatic rape exam.
The judge ordered for Sage to go to a mental facility where they affirmed her as a boy. Now, the therapist tried to convince her to cut off her perfectly healthy breast, and Sage secretly told her mother she wanted girls' clothes and to be a girl. Finally, Michelle got a lawyer all to bring her home.
After almost a year, Sage was finally home, safe, alive. Sage is receiving professional trauma care. The first trafficker has already been convicted. Sage has nightmares, panic attacks, rape-related medical issues, but there's hope. I told her she's not broken, she's just scarred. And part of that hope is that in courageously sharing her story, others will be saved. Sage said she doesn't know who she was back then. She wasn't a boy. She just wanted to have friends. But her school, the judge, the attorney, and the doctor were all blinded by their ideology. The consequences for Sage were unspeakable.
We are joined now by Laura Bryant to discuss this sex trafficking case. Laura, you were in Richmond, Virginia, fighting for Sage's Law, which was inspired by a child who wanted to transition becoming a sex trafficked. Before we get into what the law entails, tell us a little bit about how you got involved with Sage's story.
Currently in Fairfax, and according to the former governor's policy, children can secretly transition at school, have an entire team of so-called experts to help them transition secretly at school, and potentially parents might not know it for years if the child requests that the parents not know. So this is a problem on many, many fronts, as it was for Sage, is what led to her. It was the first domino in a set of a whole sequence that fell, and the worst possible outcomes happened to Sage. So I realized immediately the connection of Sage's story to these policies and the battles over policy in our schools. And I contacted the person who was circulating the story, and Billboard Chris, actually. He's a very active dad who travels around the U.S. And he put me in touch with the site Parents of Inconvenient Truths About Trans, P-I-T-T, which is a terrific website. It's a parent support website of stories of kids that have gotten caught in this. And they put me in touch with Michelle. I asked if she would be willing to talk to me, and I've done some writing for The Federalist, which is a national platform, and as I talked to Michelle, I thought, you know, if this story checks out, this could be the story that helps shift national perception on this issue, because this poor child, Sage, experienced, her story ties into horrific stories of families just across the U.S. The sex trafficking piece is definitely related to these issues. So are so many of the others. She had every part almost of the terrible things that happened to families across the U.S. because of this ideology happened to her, this one child, this one family.
Now, the law would require three things. One, schools must notify parents if a child asserts a different gender identity at school. Two, counselors must notify and involve parents in anything dealing with a child's gender incongruence at school. And three, raising a child according to his or her biological sex, including making decisions about his or her health, may not be construed as abuse. So where does Sage's Law stand right now?
So Sage's Law, I'll just give you a really quick summary of what it does. It has three components. It requires that parents be notified if there are questions of gender transition at school. It requires that counselors have to, and the school have to, include parents in any plan to deal with this gender dysphoria, gender incongruence at school. So if you're going to use bathrooms, if you're going to change names or pronouns, if there's any counseling, any of that has to happen with the consent and awareness of the parents. And it also states that you cannot construe as abuse so-called misgendering your child. So if you decide to raise your child, your girl as a girl or your boy as a boy, you should have full discretion to do that if you believe that's in the child's best interests. So Sage's Law passed, squeaked through the House, and it's insane that it's even a close vote, but every Democrat in the House voted against it, which is not going to bode well for their electoral interests, because Virginia voters do not like either of these issues. By a large majority, polls even show that voters think that parents should be notified of what's going on in schools. They also are against this idea of kids being taken away from their parents and put into state custody, which is exactly what happened to Sage and which had absolutely disastrous consequences. So it has just passed the House. There was some real contention on the House floor, accusations that it was transphobic, that kids would be tossed out on the streets if this happened, which is not true and an inflated claim, but very much so. But it did pass the House. And we're now shifting over to the Senate. So the Senate is the real uphill battle. We're basically two votes short of a law. But I'm hopeful because this is an election year, and I don't think it's an impossible proposition. And of course, we have a governor who's supportive. So we'll see.
And so if these laws had been in place, it may have prevented Sage from ever being sex trafficked the first time. So does the transgender community face the same problems regarding sex or human trafficking as the heterosexual or homosexual community?
Yeah, it very much does, actually. I mean, it's an issue, as you know. I'm sure you've covered this with some of the other cases you've talked about too. But there's a vulnerability there to kids that get drawn into these communities, the transgender communities. Often people like Sage Twice was lured online. And these kids are often online because they're looking for validation and friends online. It's a hard time. They're not sure about what's going on in their lives at school. They may be struggling to have friends. And predators are excellent at picking out the kids who are vulnerable. So in fact, I referenced this in my article. I don't know if that's been said, but there's the longer story, and the tie-ins to all the policies are in my article in the Federalist about Sage. But one of the mothers that I work with on these questions and that has helped in Sage's case, her own daughter had identified as trans for a while. And when she later went in and looked at her social media, as soon as her daughter put that notation on her social media, female to male, which means you're transitioning from being a girl to a boy, immediately several suspicious quote-unquote sugar daddy accounts popped up and started contacting this 13-year-old child, maybe she was even 12 at the time, and sending pornography and sending all kinds of links. And this is not the only case that's happened in. So basically what happens is there are these predators, these active predators online, and that notation, that transgender notation, if a kid puts that on their social media, that is like bait to a bull. I mean, it's maybe not the right metaphor, but it's a red flag to a bull. It's a real sign that this is a potential victim. And that would be true for the boys too. I've heard horrifying stories of boys being trafficked, lured online, groomed like that, and then trafficked. So it's not just girls, it's young boys. It's a real problem. And the real connection in Sage's case and in the law that we're trying to pass, obviously not every child who begins to identify at school, even secretly, will be sex trafficked. There's not a link in the sense of, you know, it's direct causation. What is the link is the secrecy by schools. And when you have that secrecy, you're essentially protecting access by predators instead of protecting the child, because the child's greatest protection is their parent. And transparency and knowing what's going on with your child is the greatest protection you have to being able to recognize as an adult what the child might not.
Thank you, Laura. So when a child is born, most parents look into their eyes and promise they will do everything they can to provide and protect them from the evils of the world. Sadly, sometimes that evil still wins and preys upon the most innocent. Now, the hardest thing about sex trafficking and human trafficking is that it sees no boundaries or no perimeters it cannot invade. From the wealthiest neighborhoods to the poorest slums, the victims of sex trafficking can go years, if not decades, before identified and given aid to safety. Traffickers identify and leverage their victims' vulnerabilities, all in order to create dependency, and even after their escape, permanent mental and physical damage has already been done. Now, sadly, despite this being a global problem, the global community has not taken much action. The United Nations does talk a lot about sex trafficking, hold forums, and even have a very flashy website. But the increased number globally shows the right steps are not being taken, both from a global perspective as well as by individual countries and governments, which means once again, it is up to us as an individual to open our eyes, educate ourselves on the signs of sex and human trafficking, and know there are multiple resources available in your country to help if you feel like someone is being trafficked or involved in sex trafficking. I'm Skynell Hughes, and this has been your 360 View. Thank you for watching.